Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based comedians who are making their way through life and comedy and all the things in between, reporting their wins, their losses, their draws, and, you know, just trying to figure it out as they go. I'm Matt Alana Martin, and with me, as always, is...
Mr. Matt Alana Martin. I'm Dwight Simmons. You haven't queued me in like that for a while. I was...
I know. Yeah,
I wasn't ready.
I'm trying to get professional again instead of just giving up halfway through the first sentence of the podcast, which has been the motif of late.
Yeah,
it's been a faltering start.
I like what you said at the beginning. We do report our wins and losses because mm-hmm. this is a honest standing up comedy podcast that hopefully disperses some advice and some realism into this wild ass thing that we get to do. But hot intro, hot start.
I do my best.
No music reference
at all. At all.
I'm a little disappointed.
Well, let me ask you, are you wearing a 5-year mission shirt? Is that what you have on?
No. So I went to see this band called Cersei. This is like a 2-person band. Mm-hmm. It's a husband and wife, and they play all the instruments. The wife is like super talented, and so is the husband, but he just like does backup vocals and plays the guitar a little bit, and she mm-hmm. plays the piano, the guitar, she's singing, she's dancing, it's awesome. But yeah, so I bought some merch.
Are you saying that the women have to do 10 times as much as a man to get the same billing? Is that what you're
100%? Yeah, they're equal partners.
Yeah. Yeah, and he strums a couple of chords and does a few la-la-las in the back, and then he's getting that equal pay, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I did give him the money for the shirt. Yeah. I said, hey, man, you're doing good work up there.
There you go. Here's a little something for you. We also notice you as well, sir. no, I thought there was an Indianapolis-based band, though, called 5-Year Mission that was a Star Trek nerd band, because it's kind of a Star Trek emblem on your shirt. For people that are just listening to the audio-only version, all I could see on your shirt was like a Star Trek emblem with a guitar in it. And so that's why I thought it was.
Yeah, the back says I'm a goner.
Oh, okay. So, it's just a red shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we're still keeping it nerdy. And so we work the musical thing in.
Sure. Yeah. I just, you know, we have a very fervent fan base, and I don't want to leave them hanging. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, we're like, what's the band reference going to be this week? We don't know.
Well, now we know it's Cersei. And I mean, you get the red shirt thing, right? Because like, you're not a sci-fi nerd.
I'm not a sci-fi guy.
You understand the
it was
what the red shirt means. Okay, someone did explain it to you.
It was explained to me. And I was like, I just like the shirt. I like the design. It's comfortable.
Yeah, there you go.
Conversation starter to which I cannot contribute.
You just look at him and go, I just comfortable. And then you just walk away. And then there you go. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, man.
So other than going to see a cool show and getting a nice, sweet shirt, how's things? What have you been up to? What were your shows this week? Let's just jump into the recap, and then we have a question of the week. We've got some other stuff to talk about, so we'll just kind of get things moving. Nice. Yeah.
So last night I judged another semifinals round at Helium, mm-hmm. and it was fun. It was good. There were, you know, Tyson Cox went up and was clearly had the best out of the night. Mm-hmm. But it was like the experience gap.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, the people before him, outside of David Brooks, who hosted, were clearly new, figuring mm-hmm. it out, working mm-hmm. through nerves. They did a fine job, but the audience was hot. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I'm not supposed to feel this way as a judge, but it's like, if Tyson doesn't crush this crowd, I'm going to mark him off. Like, it was so, like, the crowd last week was bad. It mm-hmm. was tough.
Yeah.
And this crowd was like the exact opposite. They were hot. They were ready to go. They were laughing at pretty much anything. And Tyson went up and crushed. So, you know, it's good to see. He's done this contest a couple times. So
he's been in the finals a couple times, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to the finals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, good for him. Yeah. And it's nice to know that if it is a hot crowd, Tyson can have a good set. So
if everything falls just right. So I did that last night. And then I was at the Attic with Aaron Jackson
mm-hmm.
This past weekend, who I've never gotten to see live. Like, I mm-hmm. know that she was a writer for the Upshaws and I've seen some of her clips and always thought she was really funny. She's done late night sets. Watching her do 45 was really, really fun. I watched all of her shows. She's, you know, she's just a great writer, obviously, and well thought out bits. And she's just a comic that just, you know, stands there. It's not a lot of like what I do, frilly. Mm-hmm. Like I'm up there working up a sweat.
Mm-hmm.
She stands in the pocket and delivers these knockout jokes. And she also, you know, I think we all do this. We play around with jokes that aren't finished. That didn't land exactly how we wanted them to land. Mm-hmm. So watching her like go through that from show to show and just get better, was really fun. It's like one of those things where you watch somebody and you're like, I want to go home and write.
Oh, like, that's good.
It makes you want to go home and like fucking, it just like expands your mind a little bit. So,
awesome.
Yeah, I also, it's the attic.
Let me pause and ask a question here. So you got to watch her change it up. Was she changing up the delivery? Was she adding new lines, taking things out? Like you said that she was working those bits from set to set. What was the most noticeable thing that you've seen that she did to switch it up?
So long way around saying this, but I think that she hadn't been taking dates. And I think you're going to see this with a lot of comedy writers that, you know, the strike's going on. So they
suddenly have a lot of free time to go do some shows. Yeah.
Yep. Hopping back into stand up. So I think that was a part of her overall set, like knocking off the cobwebs and then kind of like remembering how beats go, not rushing through like certain punchlines or like taking a moment to let things breathe. By like the third set, it was just like she could have filmed it.
Okay.
It was like that perfect. So more of a timing thing.
Okay. Gotcha.
Rather than like joke to joke.
Okay.
It's sort of like watching her like remember, oh yeah, that's how that joke goes.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So, well, I mean, I totally know what I mean, because I've been in that same space. You know, when you're off the road for a long time and you get back into it again, it does. You can do it.
You can do it
and be okay. But to get the finesse and like the grace back, you know, it's any other type of performance. It just takes a little bit, you know, like get the cobwebs dusted off, you know, like you said.
It's the same joke, but it's like it gives that extra oomph. That extra 10% is very, very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in those sort of elements, when you think about like there's a like that mysterious, you know, fifth element, you know, aspect of it or whatever, like there's just like that thing, the undescribable energy or whatever that you put into a joke, or there's just something about the way that you harness it and finesse it and nail it just right. It reminds me of this Mark Twain quote. I believe this is Mark Twain, where he said the difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and the lightning bug. And he's talking about writing, obviously, with that and how important correct word choices are. But I think that also applies to performance, too. Like you can feel it and I'm getting in, you're getting laughs or whatever. But when you're just in that moment and in the pocket and you're really hitting it, then it's a whole other magical level. So, how were your sets? So we talked about her sets. How were your sets?
My sets were, I had fun. I had to do 20 minutes, which is like, it's such a sweet spot. I mean, it doesn't feel like work. It's like, especially at the attic where the crowds are already so good. What was interesting is that my late sets were better than my early sets. Early show Saturday, I was like, oh, that's probably going to be the best set of the weekend. And then the late set was more fun. They were just hot. So, I don't know. I closed on the master bedroom thing, which 4x3, my production company, just posted online. And it's just funny, man. I've been doing that joke and it's always, people always want to come up and like tag it with other words that have master. And it's always some fucking dusty old man that comes up and is like, have you ever thought about masturbate? Can you even say masturbate anymore? It's like, no, I didn't think of that. Me as a professional stand-up comic did not get to masturbate. I was like, I just told him, I was like, Aaron was standing next to me. I was selling my koozie. I was like, Yeah, man. I was like, it's just pretty lazy. It's right there. But yeah. It's just like these YouTube commenters coming to life at my merch table.
This is just a way to learn that some of those people on YouTube comments are real people. They're not all bots. They're not all mean-spirited bots. There's some real people writing that shit. Also, you could have just been like, yeah, masturbate isn't spelled that way, though.
Yeah. Get real shitty with them.
Yeah.
I just like people that don't take away. Maybe it's just like an emphasis thing on what the joke is. Maybe it's my fault, but it's like, man, people that don't get the actual point of what the bit is.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they're watching and all they can think about is like, okay, I wonder if you can say masturbate anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you saying that, you pervert? Go home.
Well, I think obviously that's the bit right now, but I think every comic has a bit where that person in the audience that they think they're the funny guy at their, you know, work or whatever.
Yeah.
That they, because, you know, it's no different than them coming up trying to give you some other tag on some other joke or tell you a joke completely out of the blue, like some street joke, or tell you some story from their life that you could use in your act if you want. You could use that.
You're picturing the same guy. He's like, he's like clearly like retired early to mid 70s, hiked up overalls.
Too much time on his hands. Yeah.
He just bow leg wobbles over and you can just see him coming. You're like, I know he's about to say some wild shit. I know He's not going to buy any merch and he's going to
sit there.
No, of course
not. No, why would he do that?
Oh.
But he is going to block the merch table and talk to you the entire time. He's going to run over there and box
first,
out.
Yeah, just like.
And then just keep until everyone has left. And then
then he'll apologize. I'm sorry. Am I in the way?
Oh. So Oh, man. Yeah.
I had fun, man. The sets were good. It's one of those refreshing weekends where it didn't feel like work.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's. Like I said, 20-minute set, and I got to work out some new jokes. I wasn't too happy with how they've developed, I guess. So I guess that's a bit of a bummer, but I really didn't have the drive to fit them into a 20-minute feature set that mattered, because doing well does matter to me there.
Yeah.
I guess I'd been doing like spots locally where I can like really test them out, but this was the first test of a real show.
And you didn't like how they hit?
Or... I didn't like how I told them. It's just like a comfortability thing. I didn't like how they're just not there yet.
Right. Well, so you're going from muscle memory. You're going from muscle memory jokes into now trying to do this bit, and how what's the order that it goes into, that clunkiness. You've been doing this long enough, that's just, you got to push through it, and then but it is it's like a slamming it. It's a shifting the gears.
It is
like as hard as you've ever seen a gear shifted in a Fast and Furious movie. It's just a slamming through the gears of just like, oh, now I'm going to do this new joke, and pop in the clutch. Okay, here we go.
The audience feels it. They're like, yeah. What? I thought we were okay. No, okay, we're going somewhere else. Cool.
Yeah. But do you think it's just performance wise? You don't think it's the writing or I know one thing that you've always talked about with the new stuff is you're doing the story about your mom stabbing your dad, right?
Yeah.
And so
I didn't do that.
You didn't do that one. Okay. No. So this is some other new stuff that you've been working. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. More like lighthearted stuff. I think it's probably writing and reps. Like we preach all the time, just need more time and patience and reps. And I'll go back and listen and see. I like the premises are interesting enough. Like I can tell the audience is interested, and there's a couple of things that should get laughs to get laughs, but then it's just like, I guess that's over. And I don't really have anywhere else to go.
Okay.
It's just like, well, I guess I'll make fun of this guy's shirt and then do another joke that I know works.
The old classic.
This extra medium shirt, but
oh yeah.
good weekend for me. What about you?
So Friday, I went up to Carmel and I hosted the graduation show for the comedy class.
Oh yeah.
And it was good. I still am not a fan of hosting. It's like, it's one of those things like halfway through it, I'm just like, yeah, I don't love this anymore. You know, it's like, it is an important skill set and it's good to do it. And I did well of like keeping my energy up the whole thing and, you know, the whole time. And, you know, and it's like, it's all their friends and family that come to see him. So it's like home run derby, you know, it's like, so it's not like you ever, I have to feel bad or do a bunch of work to get the crowd back. Right. They're cheering right. for everybody. It was kind of a smaller class this year. So the show moved pretty quickly. I threw Connor Delahunty a little guest set at the beginning.
Nice.
Cause he was in town and like, it was kind of going to be a short show if we didn't, you know, pad it out yeah. a little bit.
And so he's Carmel likable.
He's very Carmel likable. And I felt like there was a good tie in too, because he had opened for Kevin Nealon at the Center for the Performing Arts, which was like the parent organization a couple months ago. So I just felt like there was a good like little tie in to bring Connor in for that. And he did great. I did pretty well. You know, I kind of just mixed it up a little bit and I did some religious stuff, which I think they weren't completely on board with, but yeah. For the most part, I had a good, it was fine. It was good. And then Saturday I was supposed to do Helltown in Chicago, or not Chicago, but Cincinnati, but I had to cancel because, my brother's in-home care person just didn't show.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So luckily it was a co-headlining thing and Mishka Shibali was able to do a full headlining set instead of like splitting up with me. So, yeah. And I found out apparently from a friend of the podcast, Shanda Song, apparently this is a common thing in this industry because I think it's her stepmom has in-home care while her dad works. And she says, yeah, like twice a week, they just don't show up.
What?
Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah. So shit. I didn't get the shows in that I wanted, but we made the best of it. Like we watched the Beanie Bubble movie on Apple Plus about the Beanie Baby. Surprisingly good.
I watched it too. We watched it too.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was fun. Yeah. I like the storytelling aspect of
the storytelling aspect of it's good. And here's a good little musical. We mm-hmm. love to talk about music. That opening sequence of the truck crash on the highway set to the Cure song Prayers for Rain is like one of the most perfect cinematic moments. Like I hope the cinematographer wins an Oscar. I don't know how many Apple Plus people are winning Oscars, but
yeah, not deserve it. Not over Oppenheimer. They won't win anything. I doubt it. But that's man, that's such a bummer. I love that Helltown show. Are you gonna try to reschedule or are you just like scared off?
No, Wayne has been dope about it and he gets it. And he's gonna give me a call I'll be the first call if he has a drop out of somebody else. But we're going to look at doing something like the very beginning of next year. You know, my brother is getting pretty independent. It's just like, that's the first weekend since he'd been discharged. And so it's more like a safety thing.
Right.
So I have a show in 2 weeks at Commonwealth Sanctuary and I'm going to go do it, you know, and like, I think my brother's to the point now he can be alone for several hours by himself and be okay. Like, for the most part, anything that's going to come up is something that can just wait.
Right.
That he needs my help with. Right. And so, cause he's able to get up on his own, feed himself, go to the bathroom by himself. You can do all that, all the essential things of life. Right.
Okay. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah. And so, so I'm going to go do that and then we'll see like, yeah, it's just one of those real life things, man. Real life comes in sometimes and you don't get to do comedy. And then add to it this week, it's just really ridiculous around here. Denise is out of town for work, so I had to go up to Bloomington and get Raylan, our dog. Mm-hmm. He's recovering from surgery, so he's got a big cone on his head.
What surgery?
My brother's got a walker, and it's just like nonstop comedy around here. we found a growth that was cancerous, and so they had to remove the growth from his leg, and they think they got it all, so he should be fine. But
that's good.
So it's just that's been my week. So
damn Ringling Brothers.
Yeah,
re-ring circuit. You need to start a web series. Mm-hmm. Remember the there was a guy who filmed his brother with Tourette's that went viral. You remember the Tourette's guy? It was like one of the first like viral YouTube series.
Was this on 4chan? Is this where you saw this?
Nope, just OG YouTube.
No, I don't remember the exploiting his brother with Tourette's for views.
I'm just saying, man, the market's still hot for it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything unique. My brother is recovering from surgery. He has to use a walker for stability issues. There's not a lot of comedy. I mean, I think you're asking me that to knock him over. You're asking me to like knock him over and make him fall down. I think that's what you're...
That forced content is some of the best content you'll see.
Is this something? Is this anything? I will say on the idea of forced content, I didn't know how to phrase this, and I as a tweet or whatever to be the grumpy old man. But have you seen like, because once you click on one of them, the puts, but it's like, what would the Boy Meets World theme song sound like if it was done by the Deftones? Like,
oh no,
it's a lot of like. Yeah, if Deftones wrote Shake It Off by Taylor Swift or whatever, for some reason, it's a lot of the Deftones stuff because I guess they're easy to parody, you know, like, is that how they did? And it's just like, how about you use your musical talent to write something original, you fuck, you know, it's just like, it's like, is this clever now that we're in the, you know, 6,000th iteration of it?
You know,
which is my problem with the internet in general, like the at midnightification of the internet.
Yeah.
Whereas like everyone has to rush to make the exact same joke and they do not care if 6 million other people made the exact same joke, as long as they get it out there too.
Yep. Points.
You know, points. Yeah.
Points. So,
anyway, that's my grumpy old man moment.
It's not a Matt and Dwight Just Might podcast if we don't bitch about the internet for at least. I don't, I hate it.
Yeah.
I do hate it. And I've been, I've gotten like an influx of, it's a fucking vicious.
This is a good, like, this is a good segue into the comments on your special. Is that the influx that you're talking about?
Yeah. That master bit, that bit. And like, even like something like my third eye blind joke, talking about having a white wife. Mm-hmm. And like, that didn't happen. And I was like, what is your life, dude? Like
they say that you made it up.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Ain't no way you don't know who Third Eye Blind is. Shit like that. Yeah, it's just like they say for mental health, don't read the comments, mm-hmm. but then they say interact with every comment to drive more interaction.
For, like,
It's like, man. Yeah,
do you want to be happy or do you want views? You know, that's what it comes down to.
I want them views, baby. I want them views. But yeah, I got I stopped looking at the total number of views on the special, but Chase, the main guy at 4x3, said we had an influx of 600 views yesterday. And I don't know why. And I'm done caring. I'm pretty much done promoting it. Outside of when they tag me in something, I'll repost it.
Yeah.
So, but
hold on, wait, sorry. I was going to. I'm looking at the comments on there because I want to see if there's any good ones that I want to bring up.
I posted a little carousel.
Yeah. Yeah, so these are not on the YouTube shorts. These must be on Instagram or Twitter or something, right?
So probably posted on Twitter. Well, not Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok.
Gotcha.
The TikTok, it's got like 72,000 plays.
That's awesome.
And on Facebook, it has like 14. It's the same fucking clip. I don't know. I have so many more.
I like on. There was a moment where I almost said 14,000, but I knew you meant just 14.
Yeah, just 14. No, this is good. This is one. He goes, weird. I say it. And if a lib Nazi opens their cock holster about it, I'll double down, rub it, and fucking dare you to do something about it. Fuck that. I won't do what you tell me. Isn't that a fuck that? I won't do what you tell me.
It's a rage against the machine.
That's rage against the machine.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what they. I don't think that's the purpose of what they meant to say in that song.
Yeah, no, I don't. It's not, you know, but, you know, if Paul Ryan can also claim to be a Rage Against the Machine fan.
Yeah. It's like when Marjorie Taylor Greene quotes Martin Luther King.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, like that's just not the application in which this quote was meant to be taken.
Yeah.
Marge.
Yeah. I'm glad that you're on such a good level with her that you can call her Marge.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you can.
She calls me D Murder. I call her Marge. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
We're tight like that.
I got to say, if she calls you D Murder, it does feel racist. Can I say that?
Well, she's anything but authentic. So,
yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah. This feels like a good time to plug my upcoming shows.
Perfect time.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm at Commonwealth this Friday.
Where can people see D Murder in action, huh?
You can see me. You can find May Friday, August 11th in Dayton, Kentucky at Commonwealth Sanctuary. I believe Matt's doing that very next week. Okay. They've been promoting the hell out of it, which means one of two things. We've sold zero tickets. Or they're very excited about the show. It's like when you keep getting tagged, you're like, oh no, they're panicking.
No, I don't think it's that. I think that they are excited about it. I know Nathan and Jacoba, who opened up the venue and that are working with Sean. Sean's working as the booker. Mm-hmm. But they're just very excited about this new space, you know. And they do music as well as comedy and other things, too. So Jacoba's just all over the social media. She's killing it. So, yeah.
She is. They're sharing my clips and so. I'm excited. I've heard really good things about that place, and I'm very excited. And then I did want to plug at the end of the month, I have my show in Chicago, August 25th at On Tour Brewing at 7 p.m. That's a Friday. So if you are in the Chicago area, I've got a fantastic lineup of some of my favorites and some Limestone alumni as well. So
can you give us some names? Can you tell us who's going to be on the show?
Yes, as soon as I
some close personal friends,
close dear, personal friends,
all-time favorites.
Have you met Tremaine Bradley? I saw him for the first time.
I know that name somehow. I'm really bad at names, but yeah, I think I knew Tremaine before he was using his name Tremaine. He was going under a different name when he was in Austin,
T-Murder.
He was going under T Murder.
Yeah, I got a Michael Myers, I believe, he's done Limestone, very funny. Yeah. Lucia Whalen, and hopefully waiting to hear back, but Olivia Carter, who did it this year, who I thought was very funny.
Yeah, all killers. Good.
So yeah, come to that if you're in Chicago.
There you go. And tickets are for sale right now on Eventbrite, right?
Yep.
Cool. I don't have anything to. Let's check
out Matt's web series.
You can catch me Friday at my brother's neurology follow-up appointment. I'm gonna be at Commonwealth on the 18th doing I think it's just one show that night if I'm correct, so I'm gonna be there. I've got some killers on my show too, Corinne Turnbow, and then also Olivia, why am I spacing on her name? Very funny Cincinnati-based comic. I'm going to just look it up. That's fine. People come to the podcast for this sort of stuff. It's like, it's a form of ASMR to listen to us Google things in real time.
While you do the dishes, as I pull up my docs.
Yep. Mm-hmm, yep. Pull up those docs, baby. Let's see. I'm trying to find the little post about my show that they did. They got all kinds of great people coming to Commonwealth. They got Brad Wenzel coming. Let's see. We might have to edit some of this dead time out. I can't.
Nope.
I want to.
This is a highly unedited show.
It's true. It really is. Fuck. I don't know, dude.
He tried to give a shout out, but
I tried, and I feel bad because she is very funny. And we were on this. Our lineup is almost a complete recreation of the lineup of the final garage show that Sean used to book in Dayton, Kentucky, in that weird little garage space. And it's like, God damn it. I don't know.
Is it Cathcart?
Maybe. Man, this is real bad. I'm sorry. I also haven't been getting a ton of sleep. So Let's see here. I'm going to use all the excuses.
So we gave it a shot.
We tried. Jesus Christ. It's Google's being weird. It won't let me find my professional page.
Oh, you've been blackballed.
Maybe.
You've been blackballed.
Oh, it says because I've, it says that the comments I left on Dwight's clip were deemed racist and hurtful. So,
you know, no one gets banned from Facebook for
that's
that.
That's true. All right. So my apologies. But anyway, my point being, just come to the show and find out who else is on the show.
It's a Matt don't tell show.
It's a Matt.
Matt refuses to tell.
I'm going to tell you a couple and then you come see the rest.
And you don't see. That's hilarious.
Fucking internet. Okay. Sorry about that, everybody. Should we look at the question of the week or should we?
I have some
comedy news that we can kind of make fun of first if you want.
Is it hot gossip?
It's not hot gossip, really. It's just more like a bizarreness. This came up as a promoted ad to me. But they, you know, are you familiar with Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp, Dwight?
I am not.
Okay.
And
so Rock and Roll
Fantasy. I feel like you know that.
Okay. Well, the thing is, it's been around for several years, and I didn't know if you like maybe had like an uncle or somebody who is a CPA who went to one of these things, because that's what you need to be. You need to be like a very wealthy person. And what they were, Rock and Roll Fantasy Camps, is literally you're a dentist or whatever who also plays guitar, and you pay a shit ton of money. And then, you know, for 3 or 4 days, you're in Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp with like Joe Walsh and like all these like old timey rock and roll people, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to play covers with them, and you just like your best. Well, the same people who put together Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp have launched Comedy Fantasy Camp.
Oh, boy.
Yep. Learn from your favorite comics and TV writers, Jay Leno, Adam Carolla, and many more.
What year is it? When is Adam Carolla? When's the last time he did something? The Man Show?
I think
when I was 12.
Tours occasionally, maybe. Here's everyone who's involved with this. And this is in Hollywood, the center of comedy. Basically you come to this class. It is a 3-day long class, which is all you really need to learn how to do comedy. You need 3 days. You need a Thursday through Sunday. Sorry, it's a 4-day class. It's a 4-day comedy class.
Oh, that's much better.
Yes. So it's not competitive. It's not a contest or anything like that. But you basically will learn how to write and perform comedy from Jay Leno, Adam Carolla, Carol Leifer, Harlan Williams, Alonzo Bowden, Caroline Ray, and then it gets into a bunch of writers, people have written on shows whose names we probably wouldn't know. Okay. So not only are you learning how to do stand-up, you're also then there's going to be a writer's room thing where they're going to teach you where you're going to write a sitcom together under the guidance of these writers. Then you're also going to pitch. You can have your chance to pitch your own show's idea, and they'll walk you through the pitch process, right? There's improv workshops. Let me know if this seems like too many various things to do in 3 days. Different things. There's networking opportunities. There's a comedy roast workshop. There's a podcasting workshop, a voice acting workshop.
A comedy roast workshop?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yep. Comedic timing and delivery workshop, comedy and digital media, and then master classes and photos with all the special guests. Okay. So again, these are all the various things that you're supposed to come in and do in 4 days. And again, if you are already very much doing comedy all the time and you just needed like, okay, like I didn't know about that thing, or oh, that's some good idea, right? Like I'm not bagging on the idea of continuing education for comedians, but Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp is not geared towards low-level touring musicians.
Right.
It's geared towards amateur musicians in their garages that have way too much fucking money, right?
Yeah.
And so the same thing here. How much do you think it costs to go to comedy? And there's a couple different packages levels, but how much do you think it costs to go to a 4-day long comedy thing? And at the end on Sunday, they perform at the Hollywood Improv on a special show hosted by Carolla.
I was going to ask if they all performed. So it's just going to be like a all-star showcase.
Yeah.
So
not all the famous people, the students are all going to perform.
Oh,
if you sign up for it, you get to do your graduation show at the Hollywood Improv hosted by Adam Carolla. And then every night they go to a different comedy show, a different comedy club in LA, and go to see a show together. Okay. How much do you think this costs?
Well, the amount of fake things that aren't even real, like how do you do a roast battle workshop.
Yeah.
How do you do a comedic timing workshop? Was it like, so there's writing and
I think
then
you can teach, I think you can help with timing and
was it like an
that.
Hour long?
Right, exactly. But cramming all this variety of stuff into, yeah. Cause you gotta have lunch breaks. You gotta, you know. Yeah.
I would say.
And this whole time you're also supposed to be writing your material and working on your material too.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So how much is
a Taylor Swift ticket right now? I would say these tickets have to be in that ballpark. My first guess would be $2,250.
Okay. Is that your final answer?
For the package, for the weekend.
For the package, for the whole package. They have two packages. They have a headline package, and then they have a VIP mentorship package. Okay. So for the headline package, the regular price is $3,499.
Underbid. Yes. Okay. Let me do the VIP.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm gonna go $5,750.
It's $44.99.
That's too much money.
Yeah.
That's too much.
Yes. Yeah. So you can ask yourself, do you want to quote unquote learn how to do comedy in 4 days? Or do like, you what? Want a used Kia?
Like, so if they were like, you'll definitely get work for the next 2 years, then maybe you would have a chance of making this money back.
Oh, yeah. But
you would just burn several thousand dollars at the potential of.
I don't think it's
geared, how to tell.
I don't think it's, yeah, I don't think it's geared toward, it's geared towards that guy that came up to you at the merch table.
Yes.
These things are like, it's the same thing as the Rock and Roll Fantasy Camp. These are not geared towards people who are actively trying to do this. It's called Fantasy Camp for a reason.
But why would you have all these workshops then? Why wouldn't they just like,
because they're comedy,
have the headliner, like the guys or the people teaching Alonzo Bowden do like a half hour set and let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Like that, that's more beneficial than, hey, you got to go to roast battle class. It starts now. You fat, like, what is it?
I mean, how in depth and long is the roast battle? It's like, okay,
I can't get over
it. You've talked about their weight. Now talk about their hair.
Yeah.
Have you thought about also the way that they're dressed? Maybe you could think of something about that.
What you want to do is you want to research their social media presence and then find their insecurities and twist that knife as many times as possible.
Now, clearly, as attendees of the Comedy Fantasy Camp, you all have a lot of expendable income. So if you really want to win the roast battle, you should hire private investigators to dig up as much dirt as you can on your opponent and then really use that to craft some zingers.
Here's a secret about those roasts, the celebrity roasts. They all have writers. They all have writing teams. Like Nikki Glaser has writers. Like they all have people that write for them. You watch the Whitney Cummings one. They're funny comics. Comics, but they all hire writers to write roast jokes.
Yeah. And so, I think that's becoming a little bit more public knowledge to, maybe if you're a comedy fan and listen to a lot of comedy podcasts, you're maybe hip to that a little bit, but it's that came up in my algorithm and
that's funny.
Yeah. And so basically what I took away from that is I am not charging enough for this comedy class that I teach, and we're going to make some changes because it is in Carmel. Comedy class is in Carmel. I feel like
you should. I think. We get,
yeah.
I mean, you're bringing in Connor Delahati.
I know. Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like from now on, to take the class, you have to pay in Bitcoin. That's
one Bitcoin, please
for a laugh.
No, I don't. I did not see that. And I'm glad. All my comedy targeted ads are like very low level, like a person I never heard of selling a how to write a joke book. Do you want to make it in the comedy biz, B-I-Z?
Yeah.
? And he's got like his finger guns pointed at the camera. He's like, no, I don't. Not really.
Yeah.
No, I'm good. I'm going to write a joke.
I think the algorithm just is getting us figured out, though. Like, it knows that I'm turning 50 this year. Like, you're ready for fantasy camp, right? You're about to have that midlife crisis, man.
Come hang with your people, man.
Yeah. Come on. Look, it's either this or get a Harley. One of the two. What you going to do? Yeah.
Yep. Mine, so I get those, and I get the beer belly shirt, which I find highly offensive. Uh-huh. And the, it was like, your belly looks like this, but it could look like this. And it's just a guy breathing. It's just holding his breath.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you do, again, like, you post a lot about beer. You are a beer guy. So that one makes sense. But yeah, this one, apparently, the internet thinks I'm an amateur comedian. <guess. laughs> Oh, anyway, but to prove what an amateur I am, let's answer this question of the week. What do you think?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
This question comes from frequent questionnaire, Trent Babb. He writes in, "Hey guys, thanks for answering my questions in the past episodes. I'm starting to think I'm the only one that asks." Baby, Trent, this podcast is for you.
Yeah.
It don't have to be about anybody else. It can just be for you, baby.
Trent, we get so many questions. Babby, we just Babby, like yours.
Babby, baby.
The most.
Yeah, exactly. We're getting hundreds of, we just like, no.
Yeah. It's all you, bad baby.
Yeah. Babby, baby, come on. I don't know. I'm following that. No.
Guys, Matt has not been sleeping.
I'm not.
Yeah. Do not take it out on him.
But no, Trent, seriously, you can always write in with a question. Love to hear it. This is Trent's question of the week. In your opinion, what does it mean when a comic says, quote, they're going over their beats or know your beats? I heard Jim Gaffigan say it in a recent Mike Birbiglia podcast, and since then I've been hearing it a lot, but still not sure of its meaning. And then he says, thanks guys, Matt, you sound happier. God damn it.
Well, happy Matt, how about you take this one first?
Okay. I think this is one of those things where, you know, because we've discussed, Trent's like he's a comedy guy, you know, he's been doing it for a while, obviously. He's got those five rooms out there. But I think this is one of those things where there's different vernacular for the same thing, right? It's the same way that some people will use pacing instead of saying timing, right? Mm-hmm. And that's, both of those are in the same ballpark of beats, right? Knowing your beats is really like knowing the rhythm of your joke. The way that I interpret it is like, where do you have those pauses? Where do you build the tension? Where, you know, like how quickly do you release the tension? Like, you know, it's really just knowing every sort of, I mean, beats is a musical, descriptor, and it's apt, you know, because jokes can have that sense of rhythm and timing and even melody to a certain extent that a piece of music does. So knowing your beats is really just owning the material. Like, mm-hmm. you just know it. Like, you're not questioning like how quickly to go into the next part of it, like how long to hold on a piece. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just really having it under your skin. And I'm assuming, particularly since the follow-up part of it was knowing your beats, like it's going over your beats, it's like as you're running it, you're not just running like, you know, the script of the joke. All the lines of the joke. It's also going through it and performing it. Because people who, if you practice at home and you're not practicing a bit, you know, before you take it out for the first time or you're trying to fix it, if you're not practicing at home or rehearsing at home, as if you're on stage, you're not practicing it correctly. You know, you can, the actual rewriting part of it, obviously you're not that worried about like performance aspect, but you, when you practice, you should, to a certain extent, even if it's just in the car on the driving to the show, you're running through your set list, running through your bits, you should be doing those pauses and the rhythm in your head. Now you can speed it up a little bit, it can be 1.5 speed, you know, where you're kind of getting through, okay, and then this joke, but within that same context there should still be that pause. It's just, mm-hmm. sure, if you're clipping through it, like, okay, and then that goes to that, then that, and there's a pause, and then I hit him with that part. Like, I, in my opinion, you should still be putting in those rhythmic elements, even if you are just kind of checklisting it.
Yeah.
So that's the way that I interpret it. That's the way I've always heard it, you know, spoken about. What do you feel like? Do you have a different interpretation?
No, I pretty much agree with what you said. You remember when you were super new and you would sit at home and you're like, you're pretty much reading your, trying to like remember, mm-hmm. word for word. And you're like, I'm gonna pause because they definitely gonna laugh there. They go, I'm gonna kill them with that one. So I should wait like 7 seconds so the laughter dies down because they ain't never heard nothing that's funny. And then you do it and you're like, God,
seven seconds is so long.
I know, right? You're like, yeah, so I got 5 minutes. and 4 minutes is going to be just them laughing. So I don't have to write that. And then you speed through and you're like, oh, I only did like 2.5 minutes because they didn't laugh at all. And then you start doing it more and more. I think the way that I feel it is more innate with comfortability, because I enjoy playing with tension, which oftentimes means silence. And that's a weapon, but I know that about myself. I think that's what knowing your beats means. It's like, how do you want to weaponize this particular joke to maximum efficiency? And like, if you like to like power through, like a lot of comics do, like a Ryan Singer that doesn't let you catch up or breathe, or a like a Ali Sadiq who just controls with facial expression and timing. It's like, it's knowing your voice means not just your joke, it's like every part of the performance. Like what we're talking about when we're talking about Aaron Jackson just getting stronger and stronger each set, it's just because you could tell she's getting more comfortable with the set, and within that meant that she could manipulate her timing, manipulate maybe a rhythm or her inflection. It's really just like it's a testing type of thing. It's like when I'm trying out the new joke, let's go with the joke that I'm working on, that I was working on at the attic. It's just like, my beats aren't there yet because I haven't done it enough and I don't have the confidence. But a joke that I've done a ton, those beats are there. I know that if I play with silence a little bit, or if I just try to reset, I know the next line's definitely going to get them. So I have that confidence behind it. So I think that's what knowing your beats is, you know, knowing what to do rhythmically within each joke. And that's a great way to build your set. I think we get too much in our heads a little bit when we're trying to practice, like our quote unquote practice at home. Just because it's live performance, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
You know, night to night, set to set. So definitely should be practicing at home, but like, don't overvalue the timing of stuff without testing it out in front of a live audience.
100%. And it can always change too. Like, you know, even if you own it, this joke has this basically, you've done this bit a bunch, 99% of the time, the audience reacts like this within a, you know, within a scale, a spectrum, right? Like you kind of know what the beats are going to be. And then, you know, for whatever reason, this crowd just blows up on the first punchline, which is even the main punchline.
Yeah.
You have to be in the moment and be able to pause and rein it in and change the energy a little bit.
Yep.
But yeah, when I talk about rehearsing at home, yeah, you don't want to get locked into that and be like the joke robot where it's just, and we've seen people that are like that they're disconnected from what's actually happening in the room. And they're just, it's almost like there's not an audience in there because they're just going at an automated speed or performing in a way that doesn't fit the room and the space. I always love this when Steve Simeone, I worked with him, he's a very funny guy. We just small crowd at Crackers, you know, and he comes out and he's just like, hey, how's it going? You guys good? Yeah, it's like, you know, there's just a few of us here. So I thought I'd just, you know, act appropriately. Because he's like, you know, because like, you know, we're just hanging out. He's like, it'd be weird if I came out here and tried to do like the big show.
Yeah.
He's just like, if I come out and go, guys, my girlfriend's crazy. It's like, the 12 of you would be sitting there like, is she crazy? And that's, it was so such funny. Like a masterful thing that he did out of the gate. And then like, so I think about that all the time. I always think about like, you nailed it, like knowing the beats and kind of owning the material. It comes down to confidence, you know, and you get that from repetition and from muscle memory. And I love pulling in different things that aren't comedy related as metaphors for comedy, though. There's that brilliant line in the movie Shine about the severely autistic pianist, you know, Jeffrey, right? And so his instructor at the university is like, you have to forget the notes, but before you forget the notes, you have to learn the notes.
Right.
You have to learn this the piece to such a level that you can then forget that you're playing it and just play it. And that's a really good metaphor for comedy, you know? And so, yeah. So Trent, I mean, that's our take on it. You know, anybody wants to give Trent a week off and send us in a question.
Keep them coming, Trent.
You can do that. Yeah. I mean, you be on call, Trent. We might need you.
I like Trent's questions.
He's got good, thoughtful questions. Yeah. I like it. If anybody wants to send us a question, you can do that at mattanddwight@gmail.com, mattanddwight@gmail.com. We would love to take a stab at your questions. Let's see what else we got going on. We already plugged our dates. We talked about our old dates. I don't have any new hot goss. I am happy to say, since I am trying to give myself self-love on every episode of the podcast going forward.
For self-love.
Now, yes. Bitter, resentful self-love. Begrudging self-love, the best.
That's so funny.
No. Well, I'll just say a couple of things. Like, I had a couple of students this time around who were great. And, like, you know, and again, bucket listers, they're probably, you know, very few of them will ever go do another open mic. But they were a good crew. This is a little bit of a teaser for a future episode because we definitely have time to get into it today. But I did get my first formal complaint from a student.
Oh,
sent to my handler. And basically they complained that I was too woke. They didn't use that terminology, but an elderly man who may have been at your show and came to the merch table, who took the class, never said shit to me about it, but went to my quote unquote boss, the person who's my contact there, at the venue, the facility. And they're, you know, and everything's fine. I didn't get in trouble or anything. Like, they're like, okay, just so you know, this came in and we,
oh,
you know,
my God, that's amazing.
We got you back. It's a lot to unpack. Basically, well, fuck it. We got a couple minutes. We'll get into it.
You can't tease that. That is amazing. You are too woke.
They basically sent like a Ben Shapiro style manifesto about how I was bashing straight white men, essentially, in the class.
Okay.
Not straight white men taking the class.
Okay.
But in the example of punching up, punching down, talking about how straight white men are still kind of like a safe target. That's essentially, if you're not a straight white man and you're making a joke about straight white men, this is sort of still within the realm of punching up because...
Yeah.
Still a patriarchal society. White people still have a ton of privilege in America. You know, straight people aren't having their sexuality legislated into criminality, you know.
Yeah, this is a comedy club or MSNBC.
Jesus,
man.
So, yeah. But
that
I
was
just
too much for
talking
this guy.
About the, yeah, so that was one thing. And then on the final class, I had some female comics who were asking me about open mics. And they were like, what can you expect? And I just said... I talked about open mic signs, like, just so you know, oftentimes at an open mic, you will hear sexist comments directed at you if you perform, right? From some other comic later on in the lineup might say some dumb shit. I was like, it's not going to happen every single time, but it does happen. It is something that happens, particularly at that very amateur level. There's a lot of sexism still, you know? And apparently that was also a sticking point.
Oh.
And so they wrote, yeah.
Did you do did you ever ask them who their favorite comic was?
Do
you remember who this guy said?
I don't remember. He's an older person. So I think he said older. I probably said like a Carlin or something like that, which wouldn't surprise me because the far right loves to think that they like Carlin.
It's wild.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's wild.
They love to cite Carlin and not listen to any of his material.
I know.
Or interviews, you know.
It's just baffling.
Yeah.
It's infuriating. That's hilarious. Too woke, too liberal, Matt Alano Martin. Well, I think the Comedy Mothership in Austin has comedy classes, so maybe you can recommend one of those.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can recommend Fox Nation. They're putting out new specials.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yep.
Fox Nation comedy.
I had a different guy tell me in the class that his favorite comic or one of his, you know, I just asked like, well, who's a comic you really like a lot? Doesn't have to be your all-time favorite. And they said Shane Gillis, who, I'm not doubting that Shane Gillis is funny. Like people, lots of comics have said he's very, very good at comedy.
Yeah.
But he also said a bunch of fucking racist shit. and doubled down on it. And so, but it's like, I don't, all right, I didn't say any of that shit in class. I'm like, all right, that's who you like. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. But he probably doesn't know that. Like this, we get this, in our heads. I don't think so. Like, I think
this particular person did know that.
Yeah.
Because they were very comedy literate. Right. Okay. Like they listen to a ton of podcasts. There's no way that they did not hear about that in some form. I'm assuming.
Maybe they didn't care.
And their material was not racist. You know, like what they did in the class was perfectly fine. You know, is like all observational jokes about reality TV. You know, so if someone says someone I don't like, I don't like tell them they're wrong.
Yeah. Like if someone said Carlos Mencia, you'd just be like, cool.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, okay, all right.
Yeah.
You know, and then I move on, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it is.
If someone does say Carlos Mencia, though, I don't do any of my own material in the class. As an example, I only do your material. And man, does that get problematic really quick? Let me tell you.
It's tough. That has to be tough for you, I'd imagine.
See, there's black people, and then there's. Yeah.
that guy doing blackface is a little liberal, isn't he?
Yeah.
A little too liberal for my taste.
But anyway, so it's my first, and it was just so, it was such a long, there were two back to back, because he wrote this very long email, and then they shared their response. They were like, hey, just a heads up, this is what came in, and this is our response. And they just kind of, you know, and the thing is, there is always a representative for the Center of the Performing Arts in the class, sitting in the class,
right?
And so they had my back, and they're like, No, this guy's misinterpreting what he said. So that's kind of like they said very politely back, like, oh, we think he may be missing. So then he doubled down and sent an even longer second email.
Oh my God.
Which really had a bunch of made up statistics about like how oppressed white men are in our society now. And I mean, it was.
Yeah, you had no shot with this guy.
It was something. Well, and the thing is, again, like he didn't say shit to me about it.
Why? Yeah. These people are cowards.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're not a coward and you swing on somebody, there will be a Wakanda Forever type of reckoning, as we saw.
There'll be an Alabama boat fight.
Oh my God. I can't stop. That was the funniest thing I saw.
I couldn't believe how long it kept going. And the guy who swam to get into the fight.
That's all time. That is all time. That is, you don't see that shit.
I could run around and get there.
No, I'm taking a shortcut.
Oh man. Yeah.
Oh, breaking stereotypes one ass beating at a time. Jeez, I loved it so much.
I was just thinking about how worn out I would be from swimming. Like I would be like, oh, I'm gonna end a minute. I'm not ready to fight after I just swam fast as I could across the fucking
It was day. Like yeah, black people of all ages got Uncle over there swinging a damn folding chair like it's WWF 99.
It was amazing.
So
all right, so anyway, so that's that's some other little, there's some goss and not some comedy drama here at the
some
very
comedy
end
drama
of the podcast.
I love it, man.
All right, but let's end on some love. You know, we don't have to focus on the people who you know, don't get it, and on the larger scale of things, I got news right when we were just getting started this that Bloomington comic Mark Bookwalter is in the hospital. He may have suffered a slight heart attack he's saying. I mean, he's the one who's reporting on it.
Okay.
And apparently he's stable and okay, but love to Mark, and hopefully he has a speedy recovery, man.
Yeah, man, that's super scary. Get well soon, Mark.
If not, just come on down to Jeffersonville and join the crew here.
Hop on Matt's web series.
My hospice, my hospice care.
Golly.
That's
crazy. Get well soon, Mark. I just want to say thanks to everybody that's watched the special. A lot of people have reached out about it, and it's really nice when people, you know, say, tell me what their favorite jokes are on it. That means a lot. So thanks for watching it and being specific. I'm happy with it, and I'm grateful that I get to do this and people got to see it. So eternal gratitude from me on that.
Oh yeah, that's a great way to end it. Yeah, and I'm doing better, everybody.